This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to you all. It's my pleasure to introduce Brian Martin to you all. Brian has spent basically all his life working with young people. And in that work over the last 25 years, hopefully we'll hear some of what that's included. But he told me that some of what that has included is going on canoeing trips with them all the way from northwestern Ontario down to Florida and many places in between. The reason that Brian is passionate about working with young people and ministering to them is because he lives aware that the young people today are going to be our parents, employers, and leaders tomorrow. Let's give Brian our attention as he shares with us his experience and his insights about working with Generation IY. Brian?
Thank you, Jared. It's good to be here and share with you all. Before we get started, I'd like to know who's here a little bit, or why you chose to come here. I'm assuming that you're in this workshop because you want to talk about working with young people or today's young people. So are you teachers? How many teachers are here? School teachers? How many of you are involved in some type of kids club ministry with your church? Quite a few of those. That's half the group right there. How many of you have taught vacation Bible school, summer Bible school? A bunch of you have done that or are doing that or plan to do that. I'm sure there's some parents here too, right? There may be other roles of working with children. How many of you are parents of an adopted child? Okay, one of those here today too. I welcome you, and I certainly, I don't have all the answers. In fact, I'm getting ready to talk about a lot of things I don't know much about. As I look over the crowd, I was totally expecting more of Generation Iowa to be in this class. But I'm looking at some white hair. I have a board member here from Allegheny Boys Camp. He's an old guy. So there's some old guys here too. So hopefully we can learn together. Generation Iowa is just a term that I stole from a book that was written by Tim Elmore called Generation IY. And Generation IY just simply refers to today's young people. And if you look at kind of the generations, the way they're still living, my generation is called Generation X. Are you familiar with that? I'm 48 years old, and so I probably fit that Generation X time. My parents were what was called baby boomers. You're familiar with that? And their parents, my grandparents, are sometimes referred to as the greatest generation. You ever heard of that? Those are the guys that fought in World War II, or won World War II in our nation. And that's sometimes referred to as the greatest generation. That greatest generation accomplished a lot. I'm kind of talking in big terms here in America, but it's the greatest generation, it's the baby boomers, and it's my generation, Generation X. Well, somebody was looking for a title for the next generation after Generation X, and it's Y. That's kind of a boring thing, like after X is Y, right? So that generation is Generation Y. Sometimes also referred to as millennials. You've probably heard of that, the millennial generation. In Tim Elmore's book, he talks about Generation Y or IY. And IY just simply refers to all the technology that this generation has, iPads and iPhones and iPods and iTablets and on, right? So that's all that IY means. It just means today's young people, a simple title. Kyle Stolz, who's been organizing these workshops, wanted us to come up with really cool titles. But really, the title should be just working with today's young people. That's the title of our of our workshop, and just want to share some things that I've learned and share them with you as we talk about working with today's young people. Let's ask the Lord for His presence here. Father, we just thank You for the opportunity to share here today, and we ask that Your presence would be here, Your Holy Spirit would be here, and that You would speak to us as we share together in this session. In Jesus' name, amen. As Jared mentioned, today's young people are tomorrow's parents, employers, and leaders, and that's what makes this session so important, right? I know that many in my generation and my parents' generation, they kind of clucked their tongue and wagged their head at young people. Young people today, you know, that kind of idea. But the reality of it is we need to do something about whatever the problems are, and do more than shake our head, because young people of today are the parents, employers, and leaders of tomorrow. You know, the tragedy of it is the parents... or the young people today or the parents tomorrow, that's already upon us in many ways. At Allegheny Boys Camp, we're working with many parents or boys whose parent of the boy has been a product of a single parent home. The parent that we're working with grew up in a single parent home, and so that just changes everything. We'll talk about that a little more as we go along, but it happens before you know it. I can't believe it. There's boys that we worked with at Bald Eagle Boys Camp that come around to camp today bringing their children. And I remember when they were at camp and they were 14 years old, I said, hey, one of these days you're going to be a parent. And all of a sudden it happened. Now I know I'm starting to sound like an old man, but it really does happen quicker than you think. For those of you who are young people, tomorrow comes very quickly, and the young people of today are parents, employers, and leaders a lot quicker than we realize. Just talking about some realities of today's young people, you should have a handout. It's just something to maybe help you try to organize your thoughts and remember a few things. But some realities of today's young people that I want to share, and there's more that could be shared, but one thing that I think is influencing today's young people in a major way is the fact that they spend a lot of time looking at a screen of some kind, and it has a huge impact on their life. The things that they learn by looking at that screen, the things that they miss out on by spending so much time on a screen. And someone has said that that boys spend 13 hours a week looking at a screen or playing video games and all the other things you can do on a screen. I think actually there's some children, or a lot of children, that's an average. There's a lot of children who spend double that on a screen, and particularly the troubled children would spend even more time looking at a screen. And so this creates a huge problem. I'm not standing here today picking on technology, because we all know that technology can spread the gospel. There's so many great things that technology can be used for, but there's a lot of evil and bad things about too much screen time. And I think that's a reality we need to remember as we work with today's young people. Whoops. I think a second reality is that there's an awful lot of children today that are on some type of medication for their behavior problems. And I'm not saying that children should never be on any kind of psychotropic medication, but what I am saying is that is way overused. Many doctors that I've talked to over the last 20 years admit that this child really wouldn't need to be on medication for his behavior problems if there were other things in his environment that were in place, if he had parents who paid attention to him. But many parents take their child to a doctor, put them on medication to help them behave, because the parents have decided that they don't have time to raise their children. Now, I'm not undermining the fact that there are children that can benefit from some type of medication. It's just that in working with young people, it's way overdone. And as we work with boys at camp, it amazes me how often that, you know, we talk to a doctor about the medication that a boy is on and explain to him what is going to happen while a boy is at camp and you know, the physical activity that's there and supervision is there. A doctor will pretty quickly say, oh, well, he can get off of this medication. And you know, in a couple weeks' time, this medication that he's maybe been on for years and years is just, you know, prescribed right out of there because his needs are being met in other ways. And so I believe our children are way over-medicated in spite of the fact that there are times where it can be helpful for a child to be on medication. And I think that the reality of a child being on medication when they're young also predisposes them to drug abuse later in life. And I think that's an important reality to remember when we're working with today's young people. I think another reality is that the children that we work with today are under a lot of pressure to have education in a certain way. And when I say education, I'm basically talking about the public education or education that is, I want to say, maybe for a better way of saying it, it's over academic. Education is important. We need to learn. Children need to learn a lot of things, but that learning or that education, I think it's too bent towards academics for many children. There are federally mandated standards that schools have to meet, and there's just a lot of pressure today for a child to grow up and get a good education. And I want to say a lot of times that education is without purpose. I know there's school teachers here today, and I'm not insulting you. In fact, if you're a school teacher here, you're probably doing a good job in a Christian day school doing education or teaching an education that actually has purpose. But many children today are growing up with this pressure to get an education to basically get an education so you can graduate from high school, so you can graduate from college, so you can get a good job, so you can make lots of money, so you can buy new clothes, so you can retire early with a lot of money, so you can die and will it all to your children. What's the purpose, right? There's no purpose in all that. And children know that. Children that are under all this pressure to achieve these high academic standards, there's no purpose. And so I want to say that our problem isn't education, it's education without purpose. And the pressure that many of our children are under to do that. I had a neighbor that lived next to me when we lived in Pennsylvania that this young man got done with high school in our local public high school, and he did what a lot of Americans do when they get done with high school. And they don't know what to do next, right? You get done with high school, what do you do next? Well, if you don't know what to do next, you go to college. And then if you go to college for 4 years, you don't really know why you're going to college. And, you know, there's no purpose there. We went to college just because we got done high school and don't know what to do next. So he went to college for 4 years on his dad's nickel, right? His dad's paying for it. He finishes his bachelor's degree in college in our local university, goofs off for the whole 4 years, basically just kind of parties and carries on. Almost every time I saw this young man, he was wearing pajamas. And so he spends 4 years in college, gets done with college, and he still didn't know what to do. So he did what a lot of Americans do, and he stayed in college for 2 more years and got his master's degree. So he completed 6 years of college with his dad paying for it. Leaves college after 6 years with a master's degree in American history. At the end of 6 years in college, paid for by his dad. Did I mention that? Paid for by his dad. He still doesn't know what to do. But after 6 years, it's time to get a job. And so he took his credentials in American history, and he should have been credentialed to go become a history school teacher in a public school somewhere. So he attempted to get a job as a public school history teacher. And I don't know what his interviews look like. I just know what I saw when I saw him. But he went to several interviews and interviewed at several public schools around the state of Pennsylvania. And at the end of that whole process, he was unable to get a job as a teacher in a public high school, even though he was credentialed by our local college. He should have been able to get a job as a history teacher. He was unable to get a job, and so after 6 years in college, he went and got a job at Advance Auto Parts for $8.50 an hour. I don't have a problem with a guy working at Advance Auto Parts, but he didn't need 6 years of college to do that. And that's what I mean by education without purpose. And I think a lot of our children are growing up, and they should. They should get an education that has a reason behind it. It's okay for a kid to grow up and be a welder. We're not all going to be white-collar jobs, right? There's nothing wrong with being a plumber and learning a trade and doing something that's useful. I think in America we kind of have this. I'm making generalized comments here, but in America we have this idea that every child needs to get an office job in some 10-story tower. You know, that's what success looks like, and make a bunch of money and all that. And it's education without purpose is a reality of our generation. This is the biggest reality of our generation that I think is most influential, though, and that is the reality that there's too little family. And I don't have to tell you that family today in our country is broken, and our families are really broken. There's 24 million, it's an astounding number in my mind. There's 24 million children that live in a home without their biological parents. And I look at my own childhood and the realities of my growing up years. If I would have grown up in a home without my dad there, I'm sure I wouldn't be standing here today. Without the influence of my dad and what he brought to that. And so for many children, boys are growing up without that discipline that comes from a dad. Girls are growing up without that affirmation that dad brings for their femininity. And so it creates an awful lot of problems. And it's a reality that has changed dramatically in the last 20 to 50 years in our nation. And it's really changed the whole landscape of today's children. It impacts gender issues. It impacts, the family. The breakdown of marriage impacts the family. I know that for many of you sitting here today, if you look at your childhood, your ancestral family is probably a pretty important part of your life. And by ancestral family, I mean your extended family, your uncles, your cousins, your grandparents on both sides. We don't all have perfect families. I don't, and you don't either. But for many of us here today, our ancestral family, the extended family, was an important part of our growing up. And for many of the youth that we work with today, they're growing up in a family that is a nuclear family. All it is in that family is a mom and a child, or two children. And there's no supports for many families outside of that nuclear family. I'm friends with a lady that grew up in a family where her father was an alcoholic. In all her growing up years, that was her memory of her father, the ups and downs that went with his alcoholism and his drinking binges and the effects it had on the family. But she, by the grace of God, was blessed with an ancestral family that was fairly strong and fairly functional. And so she grew up to be a young lady that loves the Lord and has a family of her own today and is fairly functional because of the supports that were in place from her ancestral family. She remembers, in spite of her dad's alcoholism and the tragedies associated with that, she remembers her cousins always being there and her uncles kind of stepping in and taking the role of that her father should have been taking. There were supports in place for her to overcome a really difficult thing. To have an alcoholic father is a really difficult thing. But there was enough supports from her ancestral family, the godly people in her extended family, that overcame that really big problem for her. And I want to say that in many families today, the families are so broken and fragmented and dysfunctional that there's no extended family supports in place. So any little problem that comes along for single mom and her children, any little problem like a loss of a job or some kind of health problem or a marriage problem you name it, any little problem, and these aren't little problems, but any problem that comes along as a nuclear family, they become much bigger problems because there's no supports there. And our nation is filled with families that are fragmented. Judith Wallerstein wrote a book called The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce. And she had her book is just basically a 25, now going on 30-year study of families that have divorced and the children in those families. And she followed those families, and it's an interesting book. I have it up here. I encourage you to read it. It is not a Christian book. It's written from a secular perspective, which is another thing that makes it really interesting. But from a secular perspective, the story is that divorce has a pervasive and immediate impact on children. And our culture lies about this. In our culture, we say, well, it's probably best for the children because mom and dad don't get along anyway. So it's probably best for the children that they would separate. And it's not true. Or we say, well, children are really resilient. No, you know, when they're young, they can, they can overcome things and they'll get over it in a few years. And it's not true. In this book, Judith Wallerstein follows children for all these years, and actually, the problems associated with growing up with a family that is divorced, in some ways, get worse as the years go by. 5, 10 years, 15, 20 years, there's still serious consequences for divorce. And so our culture has lied about this. And you and I are so blessed to be a part of churches that still say one man and one woman for life. And so we may be thankful to God for that. But that is an effect on the generation of young people that we're working with today. Donald Miller, and I don't know if you've ever read any of his books. I'm not promoting everything that Donald Miller writes, but he wrote a book, To Own a Dragon, and he talks about what it's like to be a boy growing up without a father. And I don't know what that feels like, and so his book has been very informative to me as he writes about what it's like to grow up without a father, and he basically talks about how growing up without a father is like owning a dragon. And you can imagine that owning a dragon would be a serious problem, right? It'd be a big problem. How do you take care of a dragon? And so in his comments, he talks about the difficulty of growing up without a father, and he also writes about just the challenge of relationships for a young man growing up without a father. The challenge of being committed in relationships. Donald talks about as he gets into his own 30s, in spite of the desire for family and desire to marry and have a wife, he recounts some of his challenges to make a commitment. And he dated ladies and courted for a long time, and things just didn't work out, and he tried again, and then he got afraid of marriage and backed away from it for years. And he talks about his own challenge in commitment to relationships. And I want to say that commitment in relationship is difficult for adults who haven't experienced commitment in relationships as children. It's that simple, and we know that. Donald Miller shares that in a way that I don't understand, because I grew up in a two-parent family where my parents stayed together until Dad died. Generation IY, or today's young people, one way that Tim Elmore has described this is that they have refused to pay toll. Generation IY comes to the toll booth of maturity in life, and they haven't paid that toll. And I was on the toll road going up into New York City here this past spring, and I got to the toll booth on the toll road, and of all things, I didn't have any cash on me, and my Easy Pass was no good in New York, and so I was stuck at this toll booth with no way to pay toll. And so the cars were lining up behind me, and the person came out of the booth and waved the cars around the other side. And I'm sitting there feeling all embarrassed. I should have had a little cash so I could pay toll, but the attendant had to come out and take my registration and take some information, name and address and all this stuff, so they could send me a bill in the mail and charge me $10 extra. All this time the traffic's lining up, 5 lanes of traffic, and I'm feeling so embarrassed about not being able to pay this toll. But what happens You know, for many young people, when they come to the toll booth of adulthood and maturity, they basically put the car in park and sit there and refuse to pay the toll. And just life goes on. The toll booth of maturity involves things like completing school, things like learning to drive, learning to drive. I can't figure this out. When I was 16, I wanted to get a license. But I know several young people that are 16, 18, 20, and it's like, well, I don't need a license. I just ride with mom. Come on! The toll booth of maturity requires a whole bunch of things that when you get to that age, you get your license, you go get a job, and all these other things. And for many young people, they get to that toll booth and just don't don't do the next thing. They refuse to pay that toll so they can continue on the highway of maturity. Children mature in typically four different areas: biologically or physically. Obviously, that's pretty obvious. Children also need to mature and grow in their intelligence, or cognitive, logical ability to think. Children need to grow in their social skills, relationship ability. As children grow up, it starts at birth and goes to adulthood. We need to improve and grow in social relationships. And children need to also grow and change in their emotional abilities, their emotional intelligence. And I think that includes also spiritual or matters of the heart intelligence. And Tim Elmore in his book says that children are growing up lopsided today. And that's kind of what I see in our work at camp. Boys that come to camp sometimes are extremely mature and worldly wise at 10 or 12 years of age. They know things that I never knew at 12 years of age. But in other areas, they're just socially and extremely immature. They might be 15 years old, but still functioning at about a five-year-old level in certain areas. And so a lot of today's young people are growing up very lopsided, very gifted in some areas and pitifully behind in other areas. And Tim Elmore says that there is no correlation between giftedness and maturity. Today's young people are gifted. And sometimes just brilliant in certain areas, but that doesn't mean they're mature. And you and I as caregivers and people who are trying to work with today's young people need to find ways to help them mature. Jared, what is my cutoff time?
11:15.
All right, thank you. We need to, as it says in Jeremiah 6, 16, we need to stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient past. Ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. We need to evaluate what's in front of us today as caregivers and people in God's kingdom that want to serve young people today. We need to evaluate what are ways that we can impact the world. And I want to share with you just a few thoughts as we try to evaluate that and think about how we can get involved. And I got to admit to you that in many ways, And this is where I start to sound like an old man. And I'm only 48, so it's not okay for me to sound like an old man. But I got to admit to you, in many ways, I look at today's young people, and it's kind of depressing. It's kind of discouraging to look at where we're headed. If the children that I see today in our culture, the ones that shuffle around in Walmart, are the parents and leaders and employers of tomorrow, we're in trouble, okay? So there's a certain amount of just depression that goes with that fact as you look at the reality of it. But I was challenged and inspired 4 years ago at the REACH conference. I sat in one of Merle Burkholder's sessions, and Merle kind of gave me a tongue lashing, and I don't know if he knows he did that, but it kind of set me straight a little bit on this fact that, you know, when I sit here and feel discouraged about the future, basically I'm undermining the power of God and the power of His people. And so I don't want to do that. And I've tried to change my tune a little bit. But it still is kind of discouraging to look at the realities of today's young people. I want to encourage you today in some areas, things that can be done. As we work with today's young people, we evaluate the realities that's in front of us. What are the things that we need to do as people who care? What are the ways that we need to help young people? I think we need to help them in these three areas, in their emotional intelligence. We need to help children learn to manage themselves, how to control their anger, to be aware of how they affect other people around them. We need to help them learn to manage their relationships. There's so many children that are growing up, and they're kind of they're in a little bubble. And I think many children are growing up in one or two child families. There's a lot of children that are, they're the only child in their house. And so they don't know what it's like to have a little brother that comes and steals their socks. Or they don't know what it's like to have somebody just kind of mess with their personal space. And we need to if we're a teacher or we're working with children in whatever environment, we need to help them with their emotional and relational intelligence. We need to challenge our children in moral intelligence and their character and honesty. What it means to be a person of discipline. To be able to set an alarm clock and get up in the morning and turn in a test on time, to do our academic requirements on time and in a way that we're required to. We need to have a strong sense of who we are before God, and the way that God made us. We need to have strong spiritual values, or challenge children in strong spiritual values. We need to challenge today's young people to be leaders. One of the things that we talk about when a boy comes to camp is that a boy comes to camp to help himself and help others. And I think that helping others is extremely important. We need to teach children at a very young age to be leaders, to help another child appear in areas that they're weak, not just to be totally focused on themselves. We need to help them in their leadership intelligence. I think as you and I look at ourselves, this is kind of how I want to wrap this session up with these last three thoughts. As you and I look at others, I look at ourselves, what is it about you and I that needs to change as we work with today's young people? And I want to say that one thing, you and I, as we look in the mirror, we need to live a life that has purpose. Proverbs says, where there's no vision, the people perish. Someone has said that when you set yourself on fire, the world will come to watch you burn. And I believe that's true. You need to have a passion for what you're doing in life as you serve God. You need to be a person that is a teacher, as a vacation Bible school teacher or kids club, whatever you do, and working with today's young people. You need to have a serious sense of purpose about it and a passion that is obvious to the children that are watching you. I currently, at our little church, I'm the junior Sunday school teacher. So I teach 10 and 12-year-old children Sunday morning Sunday school at our church. And you know what they do? The little girl over here giggles, and five boys look at her, and immediately they're not looking at me anymore, right? I have to find a way to set myself on fire so that those 12-year-olds will look at me in this class. It doesn't take much to get distracted when you're working with today's young people, but I want to say that if you have a sense of purpose about your life and who you are, that you will be effective. Don't worry if the children that you're working with don't worry if the children you work with disobey you. Worry that they're watching you. Okay, it's not so much that they aren't listening to every little thing you say. Worry that they're watching the model that you're putting up there in front of them. Whatever it is that your life is about, it's the things under the waterline that they actually see. More than the things that you wish you could teach them in your class, it's more about who you are. Don't worry if they disobey you. Worry that they're watching you, is my point. The second point that I think is important to talk about is that we need to, as people that are working with today's young people, we need to have rules. We need to not back away from this idea that boundaries are important. We can expect the children we work with to test our boundaries and to push outside of those boundaries. And this little graphic is to describe that. I think that the children, when you create boundaries at a young age, they're gonna push those boundaries. It doesn't matter where you set that line, and it's gonna go back and forth. And sometimes they'll cross your line and go way outside, and you got to go bring them back in. But set boundaries. It's okay to have rules. Our culture is one that doesn't have rules or boundaries or standards. And I think it's important that we set boundaries. And I don't know, in some cases, depending on your situation, it doesn't matter so much what the boundaries are. It just matters that you have them. And you have rules and standards about the way you run your class. You need to have rules, but expect those rules to be broken. And expect them to cross your lines. And then you just have an opportunity to teach some more when those rules are broken. But as a child grows and becomes older, you open up those boundaries and give a little more freedom as time goes along. I have an Amish friend that we used to take camp at Christmas time. We would go to his farm, we would have our Christmas chapel at camp in his barn. Because it was an opportunity for us to kind of talk about Christmas in the stable, Jesus in the stable, and for the boys at camp, they could smell cow manure and see some animals and hay, and you know, we would have our chapel in his hay mow. And after we were done, we had lunch, and the Amish man would give the boys and staff at camp, he'd give them a ride on his wagon, pulled by a team of horses. One time at Christmas time, doing this, and he was giving our boys a ride on his wagon. And as we were standing there watching the boys ride out through the field, he pointed out to me down over the hill in his lower pasture, there was a huge red mule that was living in his lower pasture. And he said to me, you know, Brian, that mule is the strongest animal on my farm, but he's totally worthless. And he talked about how somebody had sold him this mule, kind of duped him into buying this mule. And he brought this mule to his farm and tried to hitch him up with his other mules. And this mule raised so much cane in the harness that he couldn't even use him. It just disturbed the other five mules in the harness. And so then he took his oldest, most stable mule and just paired him up with his most stable old mule. And he was able to get a little bit of use out of this big red mule because the old stable mule wouldn't get disturbed by us all as bucking around and carrying on. I don't even know what all that looks like. I don't know much about mules and horses. But the old stable mule would kind of settle this mule down to where he could actually do a few things, just the pair of two. But the old stable mule died. And so he said, now I have no mule that I can pair up this mule, and this is the strongest, potentially most valuable harness animal on his farm, but he's totally worthless to me because he can't work with anybody. He's never submitted to the harness. It's important that we teach young people how to submit to the harness, how to take responsibility and stay inside of boundaries. And it's really a spiritual issue to learn to stay inside of the boundaries. There's a story about elephants that I don't think I have time for. I think the third thing is that I want to leave with you today, as a person who works with today's young people, is it's important that you have fun with the children that you're working with, whatever that means in your classroom. It's did you enjoy them? A wise man told me when I was first kind of getting started and working with troubled young people, a wise man told me that you pick out the boy that you're having the most hard time with, the one that you personally inside your heart kind of know you don't like him. Okay? That kid that you don't like, you find a way to have an enjoyable time with the one that you don't like, and everything else will be easy for you. And I found that to be true. The child in your classroom that's the most aggravating to you and annoying, gets under your skin the most, find a way to enjoy that child. God created kids to be enjoyed. I know that when I was growing up, I was enjoyed by my parents. And so find that most annoying child and find a way to enjoy that kid and have fun with them, and you'll solve a lot of your problems in working with today's young people. 1 John said there's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made in perfect love. I think that if you have a child you're working with that you don't like, you're basically afraid of him. And you can't love someone that you're afraid of, right? That's kind of a basic biblical principle. And so find a way, by God's grace, to love the children and enjoy the children that are the most kind of pain in the neck to you. I think that when we do that, we can watch children grow and change. Have purpose, have rules, and have fun. with the children you're working with. If we can have fun with the children that we're working with, I think that we can change. If we can enjoy the children that we're working with, we can change the world. I want to say that what we're doing and working with troubled young people or today's young people is extremely important. If we're ever going to solve some of the major problems of our world, we have to get to work. One example of that is, we can do so many things to try to get rid of pornography, for example, in our world. We can try to run the porn business out of town. We can make rules and regulations about stores that can't have it, and our federal government can do all these things to try to eliminate porn. But I want to tell you something: the porn is always going to be around as long as there's a demand for it. And so what we have to do, for example, to eliminate porn, thank you, is to find a way to work with young people, with boys, so that they don't want porn anymore. Now that's a big job, all right? We're talking about prevention here. But when we work with boys and girls of today, girls that can be that know who they are in God's family and know who they are as a daughter of God, those are children that won't agree to things that are wrong and disgusting to God. And so we have to start at the root of the problem, I think, rather than trying to legislate some of the main. And the pornography is just a simple example of one way that we have to start with today's young people. What we're doing today is basically a battle. In Joel 3:10 it says to beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say I'm strong. This workshop is a call for you to beat your pruning hooks and plowshares into swords, and to go to battle in God's kingdom today, and working with the young people that God calls you to work with in whatever shape or form that looks like, but to go to battle for the souls of the children of today in whatever shape that looks like for you. This is a spiritual battle, and it's a struggle with the devil. The devil knows that if he can influence a child before he's 18 years old to serve him, he has him. Basically, after 18 years old, the devil doesn't really have to do much. And so it's a spiritual battle, and I think if you've been working with troubled children in any kind of form or fashion, you know that. Before you go to your vacation Bible school class, your thoughts get all disoriented and you thought you had your act together, and you get there and it's like something happens that kind of blows your whole lesson plan out of the water. It's a spiritual battle we're working with from little on up to work with the children of today, and I'm calling you to beat your plowshares and swords as we work with today's young people. Our time's short, and there's much work to do. You can expect a lot of opposition as you work with children that are growing up today. There's a lot of problems. But I'm calling you to engage in that spiritual battle. There's a story in the Battle of Gettysburg of Joshua Chamberlain, a general in the army for the Union side. Did you give me the 2-minute thing yet? Thank you. The Joshua Chamberlain was a general for the Union side, and the story is that he and his regiment of men held the Union end of the line pretty much saving the Battle of Gettysburg for the North. And this guy, the South charged his about 200 men several times, and he lost most of his men. He was down to about 60 men in himself. And the South had charged his position about 4 times. And his men were out of ammunition. And at the end of the 4th charge, they kind of backed up, and he looked at his men and asked them if they were, and they were pretty much totally out of ammunition, and there wasn't much left, and many of them looked at him and said, what do we do now? Because the South is going to come again. And Joshua Chamberlain said that we need to fix bayonets. And they jumped over the stone wall with bayonets and charged 60 or 80 of his men. And they took out about 600 Southerners because they didn't quit. All they did was just continue to do what they had done. And after that fifth charge, the Southerners backed away and said, hey, I don't know where they got their reinforcements, but Chamberlain must have got some new men, and I don't think we can take this in. And you can study the Battle of Gettysburg. I'm not familiar with the details so much as basically what I've learned is that because of Joshua Chamberlain's courage to continue to stick with it, it turned the tide of the Civil War, that Battle of Gettysburg. And so this workshop is a call to you to turn the tide in this battle that's very real for our young people today, to fix bayonets spiritually, to beat your plows into swords, and to continue to fight this battle for today's young people. Thank you, and God bless.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.